507, The Jesus Care. We will sing all three verses. Let us stand, please. Does Jesus care when my heart is pain? Do deeply for man and soul, as a burden's rest, and a care's distress, and the way grows weary and long? Oh, yes, he cares, I know he cares. His heart is touched with my grief. When the days are weary, the long nights weary, I know my Savior cares. Does Jesus care when my way
seated. It is wonderful to be here today, post-wedding. We're all excited about that. It's good to have Corey's grandparents. They've stayed. Mr. and Mrs. Berry, it's good to have them here, and we certainly want to make them know that they are a welcome guest. Also, it's good to have Jen, one of Carolyn's bridesmaids, with us, and I'm particularly excited to have Jen with us. She has entertained and kept up with our kids for 2 days. Now, whether or not she is ever going to have kids now remains to be seen, but we have enjoyed having and getting to know her, and want to just make sure that she knows that she has been very welcome in our household and will be welcome back anytime she can come, especially anytime she wants to come watch the kids. But it is good to have everyone here, and on behalf of our entire family, we want to thank everyone that came out yesterday. I started to wear the tux again today. It is still rented, but I decided it would just be too much of a distraction, just way too much. So we didn't go with that, but in all seriousness, we do thank you all for coming out and supporting Carolyn and Corey both yesterday. We want to ask that you continue to pray for them. This is a very serious, as was pointed out by Brother Barry yesterday in the ceremony. This is a serious contract and institution that they've entered into, and we want to make sure to pray for them in that same spirit. So we ask that you would remember them as they'll be making their home and their family together now. As we continue this morning with our sermon series, in which we are examining the songs in our songbook, we come to number 507, Does Jesus Care? In order to set this lesson up, I need to share with you a story. But I do want to put a caveat and a warning on this story before I share it with you. The caveat and the warning is this will not be an easy story for many of us to listen to. The caveat and the warning that I give you is that this will not be an easy story for me myself to tell you. I came across it as I was preparing for this lesson, and when I read it, I thought, yes, that expresses exactly what I want us to think about today. The story is told from the perspective of a 17-year-old boy. The young man's name was never given during the course of the story in order to protect him and his privacy. However, I think after hearing the story, you will agree with me that his thoughts are worthy of our consideration and that this young man will be worthy of our prayers as he marches forward in his life. The young man begins the story by saying, "It has not been an easy life for me. I have had many difficult obstacles to overcome during the course of my 17 years. I wasn't well loved, nor even very well liked by my family growing up. As a matter of fact, I can remember from the time I was a small child, my father not just hitting me, but beating me unmercifully." The young man then goes on to say, "Dad didn't just beat me, he would bait me as well. He would hit me, knock me to the ground, and then stand over me, even at the age of 4 and 5, screaming at me, 'Get up, be a man and hit me back.'" The 17-year-old boy then goes on to say, "If I ever was to get up and hit him back, the beating I received doesn't even merit telling you." He says that during the course of his high school years, he found drugs and alcohol, as so many people in that same situation have done before him. Said that he began to skip school. Didn't like school because every time he went to school, he got in trouble because he was always fighting with someone or another. But then if his parents found out that he was skipping school, he would receive a beating. One of the most troubling statements that this 17-year-old victim, because I'm going to call him what he was, a victim, makes is this. He says, "You would think that a boy's mother would stand up, defending, protecting. After all, she gave birth to me. However, you would be wrong in your assumption, because my mother would oftentimes pull me aside after Dad had hit me especially hard and say, 'Why did you provoke him? How stupid can you be?'" The boy said finally, at the age of 16, he ran away for good. Said that he lived on the streets for many months. And finally, a wonderful social worker came across him and has offered him the help that he so richly needed, so desperately needed. Today, that 17-year-old boy is in a home for young men who need the type of help that that young boy definitely needed, and he's receiving it. Now I want to ask you, how does that story make you feel? If you're anything like me, you've got a few emotions going on right now. You feel anger. You feel disappointment in humans as a general rule. You feel pain and anguish for the young man, for any child that would have to endure that type of upbringing. But I want to ask you, there might be something that you missed in that. And I want to know, do you feel empathy for him? That is to say, do you understand where that young man is? Now, understand me correctly. I'm not talking about the physical abuse portion of the program. I want to know, do you understand where that young man is when he says he didn't feel like anyone cared about him? Have you been there? Have you been in that lonely, dark place where no voice can reach you, where you feel no touch upon the back of your neck consoling you and telling you that all would be okay? Have you been there? Unfortunately, I feel that far too many of us have been in that place. This morning, we come to a song that asks a very important question. And unfortunately, I think it's a question that many of us have asked throughout the years. It's the one that you see before you on the screen. Does Jesus care? This song was written by a man named Frank E. Greff. Mr. Greff was born on December the 19th, 1860. He lived for the next 59 years serving the Lord. He was a minister in the Methodist churches in and around Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. During the course of his life, Mr. Greff wrote some 200 hymns, many of which, again, as we talked about last week with our author that we looked at, we still sing today. However, if you were to poll this song, number 507, Does Jesus Care, is by far his best known and most well-liked hymn that he put pen to paper. Now, you need to understand something about Frank E. Greff. You need to understand that he was a happy man. As a matter of fact, he was so exuberant in his approach to life that in that local area in which he served, he was known as the Sunshine Minister. However, Mr. Greff, just like all of us, found moments of great despair, great distress, found moments when the skies were dark and the clouds rolled in. He found moments when he didn't feel that human touch, which means so much. He found moments where the embrace of another just didn't quite do it. It was during such period in 1901 when Mr. Greff found himself sitting down, reading his Bible. He had had quite a few physical problems that year, had experienced several setbacks in both his personal life as well as his physical life, his health. And as he was reading the Bible, he came to a particular passage which, by his own admission, he had read time and time again, but this time, something leapt out. This time, something touched him. It was 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. The words which Frank Greff read that day were, casting your cares upon him, for he careth for you. Immediately after reading those words, he took out a pen and a piece of paper, and he wrote a poem entitled, Does Jesus Care? Over the years, that poem has, of course, been set to music, and we sing it, as we have here this morning, often in our services. Brother John Hendricks last week was telling me that many times this song is sung at funerals, and I can certainly see where that would be applicable. But this morning, we want to examine it. We want to look at the words which Mr. Frank Greff wrote so many years ago. We want to see what the message is, because he asks a question at the beginning of all of these verses. And just to let you know, there are in fact four verses, but we only have three recorded in our songbook. But at the beginning of each of these three verses, which you have, I'm hoping, there before you in your songbook, he asks a question. Does Jesus care? I want to ask you to do something difficult. I want to ask you to do something that I'm going to go ahead and warn you up front is going to hurt. I need you to think back on that lonely time in your life. I want you to think back on that time when you had lost a loved one, that time when your finances were so messed up you didn't think you'd dig your way out of that financial hole. I want you to look back on that time when your marriage was rocky, perhaps in those early days when nothing goes right seemingly. I want to ask you to look back on that time when your children were acting up. I want you to look back on that time when perhaps your parents, in your mind, just weren't being fair. I want you to look back on that time when your heart was broken. Look back on that day in which you felt as though you had no friend. I want to know, did you ask yourself this question? Did this question come to your mind? Again, as I've already stated, I'm afraid that far too often our answer would be, yes, it did. Well, today, using what Mr. Greff wrote, I want us to see the three areas in life in which you can know with all assurance that Jesus is there for you. I want you to see them, I want you to know them, and the next time they pop up, I don't want this question to ever cross your mind again. Instead, when the dark times roll in, I want Jesus to be the light that leads you out of that darkness. Let's begin then by looking at the fact, as verse 1 states, does Jesus care about my worries? Does Jesus care about my worries? Look there at verse 1 of number 507, if you will. Does Jesus care when my heart is pained too deeply for mirth or song? As the burdens press, and the cares distress, and the way grows weary and long. That word worry, when you see it up there before you on the screen, how does it make you feel? Do you look at it and you see something that you don't really struggle with? I know that I can't honestly say that. You are today staring at the world's leading worrier. And I get it honest, because I come from a long line of worriers. I'm convinced if worry isn't genetic, it's at least socially learned. Because we look around and we see others worrying. My mother, listen, I took the title from her. I did. When Mama passed, the mantle went straight to me. We know, as Hilliards, how to worry. But I read something interesting this past week as I was trying to decide, you know, what is worry? What is worry? And I came across something interesting. It stated that worry is you, now listen to me close, worry is you clouding today's joys with yesterday's problems and carrying them over to tomorrow's opportunities. I thought that was a fairly accurate description. However, as I got thinking about it, as I got to getting closer and closer to the lesson, I thought, you know what? That still is not expressing it. That's not strong enough. Yes, that's a cute saying. Yes, that's something that would fit on a t-shirt. Yes, that's something that would look wonderful on a church sign. And all of that's good. But it doesn't encapsulate it, because there's something about worry that I'm going to tell you that you're not going to want to hear, that I don't want to say, but that somebody needs to acknowledge. What is worry? Worry, folks, is a lack of faith. In its bottom and most base sense, worry is a lack of faith. What is worry? Worry is you and I looking at a problem and saying, you know what, God can't, but just maybe if I stew on it long enough, I can. Can I tell you something about that? You taking problems out of God's hand is never a good idea. That will absolutely lead to doubt, fear, depression, and it will eventually, trust me on this, lead to your separation from God in the end. But you know what? No matter how many sermons you hear on worry, no matter how many times we use the phrase, oh, don't worry, people still worry. And guess what? They always have. Let's think back on the apostles. Let's think back on those first century disciples. Those men who were so close to Jesus. Those men who shared so much in common with Him. Those men who loved Him so deeply. Did you know that they worried? Did you know that they had cares? Did you know that they had fears? Did you know that they had things which kept them up at night? Did you know that they had discussions, debates, and even arguments over things which they were worried about? Consider with me Mark chapter 9, verses 30 through 37. There, do you know what they were arguing over? Who's going to be first in the kingdom of heaven? I'm going to tell you today, I'm never going to argue about that, because as my daddy has always said, you let me be a ditch digger in heaven, I'll be the happiest ditch digger you ever met. I don't care about ranking, just let me get in. That's my concern, that's my care. Folks, the disciples, they worried about that though. But that's not all they worried about. Matthew chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. They also worried over worldly concerns. There we, of course, know that, as Cody pointed out to us this morning in our young people's class, John the Baptist had passed away. Christ, upon hearing this, went out into the desert, went out to get away. Of course, that multitude which followed Him, as they always did, they kept following Him. And Christ, seeing them, having compassion on them, according to verse 13, verse 14, and verse 15, healed their sick. But in verse 15, there those worrying disciples come. They come to the Lord and they come telling Him. I love it when people tell the Lord what to do. Isn't that great? They come telling Him, Lord, it's getting long towards evening. You need to send these people away that they might find food. You need to send them away that they might find food. You need to send them away that they might find something to eat, Lord. You know what's great though? What's great is that Jesus turns it right back around on them. You look at Matthew chapter 14, 15 through 18. Christ turns it around on them. He tells them, you take care of them. You see to their needs. You feed them. Now, look at what's happening here. I need you to keep an eye on the context of this passage. I want you to keep up closely with what's happening. The disciples in 15 come to him with a worry. They come to him with a concern. Christ then tells them, listen to me close, what to do to alleviate their worries. What do? Start making excuses. We can't feed these people. We don't have enough. You know what's great though? Jesus tells them to bring it to him. In verse 18, Christ says, they told him about those loaves, those fish that they had. Christ says, bring them to me. In other words, Jesus is telling them exactly where to put their worries. Put it in his hands. Let me say that for you again, because this is the main thrust of this point. You need to listen close. Jesus is telling them when they come to him with worries, he's offered them a suggestion on how they can fix it. But then whenever they start making excuses, Christ tells them, you put it in my hands. What about us today? What about us today? Let's ask the question, are we still worrying today? Absolutely. Listen, I may be the champion, but I can guarantee you that there are some here in this room that would come a close second. In your minds, you might actually outdo me in a straight-on duel of worrying. Well, you know what? Matthew chapter 6, verses 24 through 33, speak directly to those of us that worry. There, we're simply told, verses 25 through 32, to stop stressing. Stop letting our faith get tangled up with this worrying. Stop letting this pull us down. Stop letting this hold us back. Folks, our faith can't grow when we're so tangled up in worldly concerns that we can't study, we can't think, we can't share the gospel. Are there things of this life that get us down? Yes. Are there things of this life which can hold us back? Yes. But the thing is, you and I have to stop taking the problems out of God's hands. Why? Because listen, and I want you to look at what I'm about to put up here on the screen. When you do this, you give Satan the victory. When you worry, Satan gets the victory. You say, Rusty, how do you get that? Listen, worry is one of the devil's greatest tools. If he can get you focused on everything except God, Satan's running up the white flag. If he can get you focused on anything except for God, Satan is claiming the victory. What you and I need to realize is exactly what the Bible states right there. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. We can't have it both ways. Either we trust God with all that we have, all that we are, all that we ever will be, or we don't. We can't have it both ways, folks. We can't serve both God and mammon. We can't. We cannot straddle the fence. Because here's the simple truth of the matter. Christ is there for you during your time of worry. You say, how do you know that? Well, look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 30. God knows every care and concern that you have. He's going to meet those needs. What you need to do is what Matthew chapter 6, verse 33 tells you to do. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Now tell me, where in that passage did it say, worry over everything that pops up in your life? It didn't. It didn't. Instead, it gave you a simple instruction. Put God first in your heart. Put God first in your life. Put His kingdom and its growth number one on your priority list. Hand all of your worries, all your cares, all your concerns over to Him and look ever onward toward the prize. That's what we learn from this first verse. So, we start off with this first question. Does Jesus care about my worries? I think Mr. Greff illustrates it wonderfully for us right there in the chorus. Does Jesus care? Oh yes, He cares 100%. But secondly, we also want to look at verse 2 of number 507. Does Jesus care about my fears? Does Jesus care about my fears? I want you in particular notice in verse 2, it speaks of a nameless fear and dread. There is something interesting that takes place here in verse 2 of number 507 that I want you to notice. In verse 1, it talks about the way growing weary and long. In verse 3, it wants to know, is it aught but him does he see? But in verse 2, Mr. Greff distinctly asks the question, does he care enough to be near? Do you see the significance of this? When we're afraid, we don't want to be alone. Let me illustrate this for you in the following way. When I was a child, this is back before I lost my vision, so I had to have been, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe even 7. We had this lamp in my room. I can still remember it. It was a little blue lamp. It had an elephant that was hooked around the base of it. And that elephant had this long nose that stuck up just right at the right angle that light would catch it at night, and it would throw this hideous shadow on the wall. And listen, to a 5, 6, 7-year-old, that shadow becomes a monster real quick. And so there I was, little boy, middle of the night, looking around. I would wake up, and there stood the monster in the corner, that long-nosed monster. And I just knew that nose was coming for me. Well, I had a very simple thing that I was going to do. I would get out of the bed, and this went on for, I bet you, 6 months before Mama finally took the lamp out of my room. She finally decided it'd be better for Rusty to sleep in the dark than it would for him to sleep with the light on. I would do the same thing each night. I would get up out of my bed. I would take my Curious George the monkey. I would take my pillow, and I would yank the entire comforter off my bed, and I would go into Mama's room, and I went to the same place every single night. I would go down, and I would lay down beside Mama's side of the bed, put my pillow there, lay Curious George down, and I'd cover up. And when I was there, guess what? That old long-nosed monster, that nose wasn't near long enough to get in Mama's room. And I know if it did come around that corner, Mama would get it. You see, in the dark of night, I didn't want to be alone with my fears. How often are we like that? How often are we to the point to where we allow our fear to consume us? How often do we allow our fear to cause us to run away? Well, what is fear? What is fear? I came up with this definition this week. Fear is lack of courage regarding those things which we cannot see. It's lack of courage concerning those things which we cannot see. I heard a story, and I shared this with the folks that are on Facebook, and I'm hoping that you all saw this. A story about a young man that was in the kitchen one night with his mama while she was cooking dinner. And she told the boy, she said, "Son, go over there to the pantry, and I want you to bring mama back a can of tomato soup." He said, "I'm not going to do it." She said, "What?" He said, "Mama, that pantry, it's dark. And it's scary, and I don't want to go in there, Mama. I'm scared of what's in there." She bartered with him. She negotiated with him. She commanded. She ordered him to do it over and over. And the boy, he flatly refused. So finally she said, "Son, why do you not want to go in that pantry?" He said, "I don't want to go in there alone." She said, "You're never alone. Jesus will be in that pantry with you." After a moment's hesitation, the boy walked over to that dark pantry, cracked the door, stuck his head in, and said, "Excuse me, Jesus, could you hand me a can of tomato soup, please?" You see, that's where we reach. That's the point we reach. We won't even allow ourselves to go to the door anymore. We become afraid of the dark. The cares and concerns, they consume us. They take us away. We even become irrational in our reaction toward them. But here's the thing, is that fears are real. We feel them. We know them. Unfortunately, we don't often know how to deal with them. And that causes them to consume us. Well, let's ask this again. What about those disciples? What about those apostles? What about those men, those faithful men, those great men of faith that we read about, those men whom we follow, those role models of great faith and trust in Jesus? Surely they were never afraid. Oh, yes, they were. Yes, they were. Those men knew great fear. And those men often showed great fear. For example, over in Mark chapter 4, in particular verses 37 through 39 or 40, we find those guys showing their fear. we know that in the passage there that we find that they, plain and simple, they didn't want to be alone with that storm. Jesus was downstairs sleeping. He laid down to take a nap, take a rest. The storms kicked up. The waves got high. The wind blew hard. The rain pelted down. And what did those great men of faith do? Well, they prayed. No, they didn't. Well, they trusted in God to see them through. No, they didn't. You know what they did? They went down. They woke the Savior from his sleep and said, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" They were scared. And the one thing they wanted right then was they wanted the presence of Jesus. What we find is that not only did Christ give them his presence, but he also passed along peace. You see, he went out and told that sea, "Peace, be still." But never kid yourself. He didn't just bring peace to the sea. He brought peace to those souls of those disciples. They were afraid, but instantly in the presence of Jesus, instantly in the power of Christ, they found peace. And folks, the same holds true for you and I here today. You and I, we want this same thing. You say, "Rusty, what is it that you're saying that I want? What is it that you're getting at?" What you want is exactly what I want when I'm afraid. You want that peace that passes all understanding. You want that peace that comes from only one place, the presence of Christ and a relationship with Him. What you want is you want to have that courage which God promised the Israelites back in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 6. There He told them that they didn't need to be afraid. They didn't need to worry. They didn't need to be scared. They can instead be strong and of a good courage. Why? Because He, God, would be with them. He, God, would protect them. He, God, would never leave them alone in their moments of great despair and distress. Can I share something with you? God makes that same promise to you today. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He hasn't changed. That promise He made back in Deuteronomy, it applies in Hebrews 13 and verse 5 to you today. He is still with you. You still don't have to be afraid. You still don't have to cower underneath the table. Instead, you can trust in your God to see you through. Does Jesus care about my fears? Oh, yes, He cares. But third and finally tonight, or this morning, excuse me, I'm mixed up. Does Jesus care about my grief? I'll be honest with you, this is going to be the hardest point of all to talk about. It's hard because at some point or another we've all lost a loved one. It's hard because of what verse 3 says. It's hard to say goodbye, isn't it? It's hard because our sad heart does indeed break. It's hard because we don't know where to turn. It's hard because we don't know if we're going to be able to make it through. Listen, as a minister, I've had the opportunity to stand and hold the hand of folks who are grieving. I've had the opportunity to stand as a husband said goodbye to his wife, as a wife said goodbye to her husband. I've had the opportunity to stand as children said goodbye to mom or dad. I've even had the opportunity, the unfortunate opportunity, to stand as a parent laid to rest a son who had committed suicide. Folks, death is hard. But I was talking to Sister Tempe this morning, and she had no idea what I was going to talk about this morning, had no idea what my sermon was. But without knowing it, she shared something with me that I agree with. She was talking about her brother who had passed away. And she told me that the greatest comfort she's got is that he was a Christian, man of faith. And that was great comfort to her. And folks, I have noticed over and over again, and I think any minister would be able to tell you the same thing. Notice that where there is a relationship with God, there is comfort to be found. And the grieving process is much easier. But here's the thing that Christians get that so many don't. It is indeed appointed unto man once to die. We've got an appointment according to Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. Now here's the question. How can we know assuredly that God is with us, that Jesus cares about us during our moments of grief? It's because of a promise. It's because of His promises. Think about King David over in 2 Samuel chapter 11, there, of course, you know the passage that I'm referring to. There's where David saw Bathsheba. He experienced that moment of lust, then yielded to that temptation to give in and to possess her. Of course, you know what followed. Child died. 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 14 through 18. What's interesting is that after the death of the child is David's reaction. While the child was still alive, David mourned, he wept, he prayed, he fasted. So much so that when the child passed, his servants were actually afraid to tell him. But when they did tell him, David really shocked them. Because what David did was, upon hearing about the death of the child, he got up, cleaned up, went to worship God, and sat down to have a meal in his own house. Now they wanted to know, David, how can you do this? King, my emperor, my ruler, how can you do this? How can you, who have wept and mourned while the child was alive, how can you do that? And David says, well, while the child was alive, God might still be gracious. But what's telling is what he says there in 2 Samuel 12, and verse 23. David understood that the child could no longer come back to him, but that he could go to the child. He shall never return to me, but I shall go to him. That sounds like a man that's had a talk with God about what is to come. He understands that there is no hope for the dead returning, but that there is hope of a reunion. You say to me this morning, Rusty, does Jesus care about my grief? Yes, he cares. That's why he's given you a promise. A promise right there. John 14. That's why he tells you, let not your hearts be troubled. That's why he says, if you believe in God, believe also in me. That's why he tells you of that mansion that he is going to prepare. That's why he makes the promise to you, and why you can take it to heart, that when he says that I will return again, receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. That's why you can take solace and comfort in knowing that. You say, does Jesus care about my grief? I say to you, yes, 100%. Yes, Jesus cares about your grief, and he will indeed see you through. Finally this morning, there's the question right there before you on the screen. Does Jesus care? Folks, overwhelmingly and without question, without doubt, without equivocation, oh yes, he cares. Can I tell you what Jesus cares about? Most of all here this morning, he cares about your soul. He cares about the condition in which you are currently living. I want to ask you, what condition are you currently living in? Have you obeyed the gospel? If not, why not? What's holding you back? Can I be honest with you? No excuse you can give here this morning is good enough. There is no excuse good enough for not obeying the gospel. If you're here today and you've never obeyed, this is the time, this is the place. Jesus cares for you. Maybe you're here. One time you were faithful. Maybe you've strayed away. It's not too late to make things right today. Jesus cares about that wayward sheep. That's you. If you're here this morning, you need to make things right between you and your God. We want to encourage you to do so right now as together we stand and as we sing.
Have you been to Jesus for the cleansing power? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you fully trusting in his graces? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood?